And John Kay from the UK will be reading that story, followed by the author Stephen E. from Kentucky.
Thank you, Francis. My name is John Kay, and I'm an addict. Thank you to the committee for asking me to read. So this is Resentment at the World. I had living problems before I ever started using drugs. At an early age, I developed a strong resentment against alcohol. I was hit by a car and the driver was drunk. Later, I had resentments towards gays after I was raped. I had resentments towards my parents after I found out that I was born illegitimate. By the age of 13, I hated almost everyone. I also started using at that age. My first experience with drugs was smoking pot and drinking alcohol. It relieved me of all my pain. Although I did get sick, that didn't matter. I loved it anyway, and I set out to find ways not to get sick. I didn't drink very much after that. I started getting into trouble at home and at school. I was blaming my troubles on authority. I started rebelling at school, and I refused to communicate in any way with my father. Things just kept getting worse. If I didn't have pot, I felt very lonely and left out. At about this time, I lost my ability to think clearly, and as a result, I got thrown off the football team. I became very resentful over this. I blamed it on one of my teammates because he told the coach that I was smoking pot. At about this time, my parents decided to move because of my reputation. They thought if I moved away, I would get better. This, of course, didn't work. Wherever I went, my disease went with me. In the new town, I was introduced to harder drugs, and I used them because they took me further away from my reality. I started using acid and speed heavily, and I also started dealing. After a short time, I was busted for dealing in school, and I was sent to jail. This was the first of many times to come. I was repeatedly getting busted in school, so as soon as I could, I quit school. After that, I hit the streets. I was dealing acid and using it very heavily. The progression of the disease set in. I kept getting locked up. I had no one, and I would do anything to get my drugs. As time went on, I just kept getting more into acid. Everyone told me I was living in a fantasy world, and I was. I wouldn't look at reality at all. I had no time for it in my world. My spirituality had changed from Roman Catholic to Satanism. I felt like I had no place in any kind of good world. I had tried to stop using many times, but it never worked because I couldn't deal with the world. I started to try suicide at about this time. I didn't feel that I had any reason to live, but I was too afraid of death to kill myself. I felt totally insane after my last suicide attempt. I tried to kill my brother. At that time, my mother threw me out. When I was packing to leave, it hit me that I was really sick, and I asked to be committed to a mental institution. I saw a psychiatrist, and he recommended a drug detox. I wanted to help, so I went. When I was in detox, I was introduced to Narcotics Anonymous, and I finally felt like I fit in somewhere. They showed me the 12 steps of recovery and told me that if I used them, I'd get better. Having been beaten enough, I admitted to the first step and I felt relieved. The second step was hard for me to do at first, but I used the group as the power greater than myself. To believe in God, I had to pray for faith, and shortly the belief came to me. At this time, I took a third step, which I followed by a fourth and fifth step. At that time, I experienced a relief and freedom as I hadn't experienced any time in my life. I used the rest of the steps to keep my life in order, and a sponsor helped me do the steps. Now I go to meetings at least six times a week. In meetings, I found that I can share with other people involved in recovery. We have a common bond. A few months ago, I went to my first service conference, which gave me the faith to start new meetings in the area where I lived. At the time, we only had one meeting a week, and now there are seven meetings a week. Being involved in service makes me feel worthwhile. Thank you for letting me read.
Uh, Thank you, John. At this time, I'd like to introduce the author, Stephen E. from Kentucky. Stephen.
Hi, I'm Steve. I'm an addict.
You're muted, Steve.
There you go. How about now?
Good.
All right. Like I said, Steve, I'm an addict. It's a great day not to be in jail. As read in the story there, I spent some time there in active addiction. And, you know, it's funny that I share that with people. I borrowed that phrase from somebody who's passed on, but and it's in his honor that I generally say that, but I truly mean it. I'll never forget the smell of jail. Even when I go back today to carry a message or whatever I have to do to be there, I never want to forget that smell. And it doesn't matter which jail it is anywhere in the United States, it's all been the same. But, you know, to get on and tell you what's happened since then, it's been a heck of a journey along the way. Thank God for Narcotics Anonymous, the program recovery. You guys have given me a chance to live. Unfortunately, I can't tell you that my clean days stayed the same. When I wrote that story, it was probably 1982. In 1986, I moved out to Southern California, and somebody shared it earlier that, you know, things you put in front of your recovery would be the first things you lose. And money, property, and prestige became more important than my recovery. I had, as far as long-timers in this program, telling me, hey, if you keep going to these places, you're going to, you know, you go to slippery places, you're going to slip and fall, you're going to relapse. And at the time, I thought, you know what, if I was as old as you, I probably wouldn't go to them either. And self-will took over my life, and the next thing I know, I found myself loaded. At 6 years clean, I didn't know what to do. I found myself passed out in my car in front of my own house, too ashamed to go in and even just face anybody. I was blessed, had a roommate come out to the car and knocked on the window and said, hey, are you okay? And I said, no. And in that process, he says, well, what are you going to do? And I said, I don't know. First thing he said was, well, let's get your ass in here and clean up, and we'll go to a meeting. And I went to a meeting, and in that meeting, I heard somebody share that it had 7 years clean and went back out. And he was celebrating 7 years clean again that day. That was God giving me a hope shot that I never thought I could see. Because, you know, I truly thought that if I fell down, I don't know if I can find my way back, but I've come to understand if the pain's deep enough, we'll come back if we don't die before we get here. I was blessed enough to make it back into the rooms and find, you know, people that were like me, that, you know, no matter what was going on, I didn't have to use, but I had to learn a deeper understanding of what just for today meant. Okay, just for today, I've got a program. I can follow it, and I can try to live this thing and do something positive. And I don't have to use ever again as a result of it, but it's got to happen every day. And that everyday thing happening, you know, I was able to find and build some clean time recovery back up. I was blessed. I got involved with some guys that were doing a step study group over out there at the time, and yeah, I thought initially that, you know, hey, doing these steps one time, I did it. You know, what more have I got to do? Well, I've got to practice these principles in all my affairs, which means I got to go back and look at them again. And in going back and looking at them again, when I went through this thing, and then first step, I can do it perfectly then, but I got to do it perfect each day. I've got to remind myself every day that, you know, I am powerless over my addiction. My life has become unmanageable. And no matter what happens, I'm still powerless over my addiction. My life is unmanageable. I'm not controlling and making anything happen today. It's through God's grace and listening to people around me that hold me accountable that make me have to look at me, and my willingness to look at me. That's my part, is just a willingness. Willingness is the key to making this thing work. But, you know, I was truly blessed. I found myself, I left California, came back to Kentucky, and I found myself truly blessed. When I left Kentucky, there wasn't a lot of meetings going on. I came back, and man, this program had blossomed, and it was working. It was really awesome to see this thing working. I got involved again, and, you know, the neat part was there are a lot of people that were still clean, and then unfortunately there were some people that weren't, and they disappeared, and I dread, and I hate to hear it, see it, but, you know, it's sad part is, no matter, somebody told me what's important is not who leaves, but who's left. And the ones that are left here are the important ones today. Not that the other ones aren't important, but the most important are the people that are left here. And I stick with the people that are left here. Those are the winners in this program, the ones that are still here. No matter what happens to them, they're still here. They're still doing this thing. I could never, ever in my life repay what Narcotics Anonymous has given to me. You guys have given me that understanding. You guys have given me that freedom. I remember when I first got clean, I thought it was all about building up and getting things, you know, and I was doing it. I mean, I had money, property, I had things going. I had the hot cars, had the hot house, had the hot ladies. It was all about that, you know, and I came to find out that it's really not all about that. What it's about is what I can do to help another addict today, what I can do to be of maximum service to God and my fellow human being, whether it be an addict or whether it just be like somebody on the street, somebody that needs a little help today. And with that understanding, I'm able to find a peace and happiness within myself. And with that peace and happiness within myself, I get contentment. And, you know, I too, like I said, I probably made more mistakes since I've been clean than I did when I was using. Don't come to me for marriage advice. I'm not the guy. Okay. I've been through two marriages clean. And one of them, I have to own a lot of it, okay? Because I got away from the spiritual principles of this program and got involved in spiritual principles of church and had untreated addiction that made me very restless, irritable, discontent. And that lady asked me for a separation and divorce, and I was devastated. Couldn't figure out why. After it was, you know, in the process of it, I asked my children at the time, and I said, guys, was I really that bad? I mean, I was, you know, going to meetings, going to work, coming home, and that's all I was doing. I wasn't practicing principles in my life at home. And I've come to find out that if I want to have a happy home, I've got to practice these principles in my home, and I've got to be there for those around me. And I had to learn to live and do this thing again, as far as find recovery. But, you know, the neat thing was I had recovery there. Okay. One thing that always comes to mind is I remember the night I went through that separation, the first marriage, and I left and I called my sponsor and he told me to go to a meeting. And I went to a meeting that night and I called him up afterwards. I said, this meeting sucked. And he says, why did it suck? No, not a single person there asked me, how you doing? What's going on? Can I help you with or anything else? And he asked me, he said, well, how many people did you reach out and tell them what was going on? I said, none. He said, well, whose responsibility is that? And it was mine. I thank God I've got good sponsorship. They don't sugarcoat anything. And I'm not a sugarcoater. You know, some people tell me I'm a butthead. I guess that's what it takes, but this thing's real today, and it's real, real. Can't count how many funerals I've been to people that got a short time clean together and had one more, and it was the last one that they did. It saddens me. It breaks my heart to see it happen. And I know it happens, and you know, it reinforces that first one is where the problem starts. It's not the 15th. It's not the 16th. It's not the third script. It's the first one. You know, I went through a time, I got remarried and was married 17 years. The last seven of it, she was using, started out with just pain pills. The next thing I know, it was full-blown addiction. And I've tried to live through that. And, you know, and I always kept getting told, hey, you're just one of those Nazis. You can't handle, you know, you want to downplay everything. Well, I can tell you this. Continuous use of pain pills will kill people. And besides that, they're magic erasers. They erase bank accounts. They erase houses. They erase cars. They erase relationships. Something happened, and I finally got the, you know, the willingness to get out of that, and it was probably one of the best things that happened in my life besides finding this program. But it was through the people in this program that I was able to walk through this and live through this. I can't, you know, I can't describe as far as the feeling of gratitude that I've got. I hadn't been much on the Zoom meetings for a while when the COVID hit. I just said, you know, I just don't get that much out of looking at the screen with somebody. But, you know, the fact is we're doing the best we can with what we've got. I remember those early days of recovery when we had two or three people sometimes sitting at a meeting. That's all we had at the time, and that's what we got. And today I have to look at the Zoom meetings and what meetings that I'm able to go to that are socially distancing today. That's what we've got. Okay. Acceptance is the, you know, is the key there. This is, I don't have to like it. I've got to accept that this is what I've got. And, you know, I can use those tools that people use when they don't have a lot of meetings in their area. You know, we all can. We can pick up that 10,000 pound cell phone that weighs 3.5 ounces if they're big and heavy. I can call people up today. I had an experience happen just recently. It's about a month ago. I fell off a ladder and broke my heel at work. Very painful experience. Stuck up at home. But you know what? People in the program have been there for me. They've come by, they've taken me up, picked me up, taken the doctors, do what I had to do to deal with this thing. You know, this program has given me people that were there for me no matter what happened. They were there for me through the divorces. They were there for me when I lost both my parents about 20 years ago. And I lost them within 6 weeks of each other. And at the funeral home, it was filled up with people in the program. And my family kept asking me, where did all these people come from? I said, they're there for me. They didn't know my mom. They didn't know my dad. They didn't know the rest of my family, but they were there for me. And, you know, and to me, that's, you know, the thing in action. When somebody else reaches out, I'm responsible for the hand of recovery to be there today. No matter how many months, days, or years that I accumulate around here, I am never, ever going to be able to repay back. So I've got to continue that payment basis today. I've got to give back to somebody else. I've got to care for somebody else. I've got to understand that, you know what, this thing is a gift. It's not a privilege. It's not a right to. It's a true gift. But what I do with it is my gift back to God and the program with it. What I do to carry the message to somebody else. To what I do to pick up that phone and answer it when, God, I know I'm going to hear that whining. It's okay, because I could be the one on the other side doing the whining. I'm so grateful that, you know, as far as that this deal has been put together, it's helped me out. I'm sitting background, lurking, watching, listening, and it does, I get an awesome feeling of, you know what, this thing works. It really, really, really works. I felt ashamed to be even asked to be on here and humbled because I wasn't one of the ones that got here, got a clean date, kept it, did one chip, okay? I had to fall down and get back up and come back. But you know what the bottom line is? I fell down. I got back up and I came back. And I'm clean today. And I'm trying to do it today. I sponsor people and I care about people. I love this program. No matter what happens, no matter who loves me, leaves me, or dies, I'm not going to get my high today. And I'm going to try to practice these principles today. You guys have given me that. I don't have the anger or resentment in my heart anymore today. If I get a resentment today, I've got a way to let it go. I've got a way to understand and realize, you know what, I've got a part in it, but I've got to go on and do the next right thing no matter what happens, no matter what happened there. I'm not in charge of the karma bus, so all I've got to do is pray for them. They get what I would want, need, desire, and amazing things happen on both ends. I'm relieved, and usually God works in funny ways. They get what they want, need, desire, and I've got what I need. And you know what? I'm grateful to be here, and I thank you guys for my time here today. Thank you. I'm Steve. I'm an addict.
Thank you, Steve.
Thank you, Steve. Mahalo.
Exactly what I needed to hear today.
Thank you, Steve.
Thank you, Steve.